Hello and welcome to Terrifying Robot Dog. I'm Jonathan Stark.
And I'm Kelly Shaver.
And today we're going to give you a giant waffle about security and kids and the digital apocalypse and probably a few other things I forgot.
Yeah, probably.
Please stay tuned. Terrifying Robot Dog is next.
It's a trap. Yeah. I just got a strange assortment of packages.
Oh yeah, like what?
Like a pink cable and an Ewok.
Strange about that.
Right, just a normal day in my life, right?
Thought you were going to say keycaps.
No. No, the Scrabble keycaps have been delayed until the end of September. They were supposed to ship out next week.
Lame.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so tiny bit of housekeeping. I emailed the author. Did I CC you? I think I emailed the author and said, hey, we love the book. We recorded a podcast talking about it. It was all from memory. We didn't screw it up too much. And he replied and said, thanks. He CC'd the co-author. So it was kind of nice.
Cool.
Yeah. Hod Lipson. I think he's at Columbia.
Mm.
So that was fun. I also read a really good article about a hack that took place in 2017 that was called the NotPetya. Or Petya bug, that was like a worm that took down a whole bunch of things, including Maersk, or Maersk, however you say that, the sort of international global shipping conglomerate. It was like, I mean, I didn't personally notice it back then, but wow, what a story. It was super interesting. It was like, you know, by the time you knew it was the worm was on your network, it was too late. Like, people, they're talking about people jumping over, you know, key card doors because nothing worked. Like, the key cards didn't work, the phones didn't work. So people were like running into conference rooms in the middle of a meeting and ripping cords out of the wall and just like running to the next room, vaulting over turnstiles and stuff and just ripping
like
power cords.
Hoping to physically unplug things before they got infected.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah. And the entire, I mean, just to sort of summarize it, like the entire episode, it took like minutes to completely destroy the network infrastructure of this giant company that was like a key component of the global supply chain.
How did we not hear about it?
I don't know. They sort of failed over to manual processes, but you know, I don't know if you've ever driven by there, but there's a gigantic shipping container port in New Jersey that's right near, I think it's the George Washington Bridge, right across from Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
And there were like lines of trucks, you know, miles long that wanted to drop off their stuff, but they couldn't drop it off because there's no computer. There's like no way to know where to put it. So they just had to all turn around and leave. And, you know, a lot of this stuff was perishable. And, you know, Maersk was basically writing blank checks to people, to, you know, client, to customers for, you know, having to take the load to like a FedEx plane and ship it via air instead of ship, which is probably a little more expensive. It was wild. And so the sort of climax of the article was that they set up a command center in their IT department, if you will, is like headquartered in London or in somewhere around there. And so a bunch of people just flew there and they were like camped out round the clock, eating like granola bars, sleeping on the floor and trying to like get systems back online. And their domain controllers, I guess, were every single one of them was destroyed. And apparently I've never worked with domain controllers, but it's apparently a critical piece of the overall infrastructure that basically keeps track of everybody, what everyone has permission to access.
That's insane.
Yeah. And so all of them were destroyed because they have this sort of, they're sort of peer to peer. So they all update each other all the time.
Right.
But they all got nuked at the same time. So, oh well. So much for that redundancy. But it just so happened that they had an office in Ghana that had been, at the time of the attack, had been in a power outage.
Oh.
So it just so happened that they had one left, but there was nobody there that had a visa to bring it to London. So they did this like Planes, Trains, and Automobiles thing to get a copy of the domain controller.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was nuts. And if they didn't have that, they would have been like SOL.
It was this an article or a book? Or
No, it was an article. It was long. I think it was, I'll send you a link. I think it was the New York Times. It doesn't matter. I'll send you the link. It was really good. It was well written. It's very exciting. And, you know, and then they back up to the big picture of like, of, you know, it seemed to be a state sponsored virus that came from Russia and was directed to the extent that you can do that at people who were doing business with companies in Ukraine. Mm. But of course you can't really control it. And even went back to Russia and took down one of their, part of their power grid, I guess it was.
Right.
And there were a bunch of other companies that were global scale that got crippled by it. You know, tens of billions of dollars of downtime and checks written basically to appease customers, so on and so forth.
Man, can you imagine being the guy that wrote that? Like, how would you feel?
Yeah.
You'd either be like super proud or you'd feel like the worst person in the world.
Yeah, it seems like it was not accidental. It sounded like it was something that was a weaponized, but it was based on something previous to that. And I don't really follow cybersecurity at all, but it was based on something called, it was PETYA, which I assume is pronounced PETYA or PETYA. I don't know. But this one was not PETYA, but it was based on it. So I can imagine somewhere down the chain, someone, perhaps even a white hat researcher, was like, oh, look, there's this vulnerability in Windows 2000. And then somebody ran with it and like, and like took down
an entire global network.
Right. Of physical stuff, you know, and it's insane. And, you know, the article sort of wrapped up with like in the aftermath and it might have been the CIO of, I can't remember who it was, but it might have been CIO or chief, you know, CISO, chief information security officer at Maersk, basically calling it a win. It was like, oh, you know, this was a cyber attack. This is an act of terrorism. And wasn't it great that our team bounced back in just 3 weeks? And, you know, because everybody pulled together, they made it like
You happened to have a server that lost power.
Yeah, because you got lucky, right?
Yeah.
And you know, they were vulnerable to it because they were running outdated versions of Windows that had been sunset by Microsoft. Like Windows 2000 was still, I think it was Windows 2000, was still running unpatched. And everybody knew about it, but nobody did anything about it. And then to turn around and be like, isn't it great that we bounce back from this emergency of our own creation? That
in just 3 short weeks.
Just 3 short weeks.
Three short weeks and tens of billions of dollars later.
Yeah, bully for us. I guess they were writing blank checks all over the place. Deloitte had like hundreds of people in this command center, and they were just going to town. They were like, "Woohoo, payday!"
Yeah.
Man, that's crazy. It's crazy to think about. It's crazy to think about the.
Like how vulnerable everything is.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got a couple of students I'm working with that are in the security space or like really heavy into DevOps to the point where it becomes security, you know, like they're so into DevOps and so into, that sort of, I don't even know what I'm talking about. Right. Like I get the idea of what it is, but I have no clue.
Right. Like I have a good friend. One of the guys in our gaming group does, cybersecurity for the military.
Mm.
And I'm just like, psh. That's over my head.
Right. It's just so crazy. It's like, I can't even start to think like that, you know, but these guys all think like hackers basically. It's like that constant, you know, it's like when we go into one of our servers and we're like, let's look at the log. And it's like, what? Something's hitting this thing like nonstop. Every, you know, couple times a second, just looking for like some bot. Like
just looking for vulnerabilities. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. You can see it looking for like PHP files and stuff that aren't there, but it's looking for them.
Yeah.
And that's just, they just constantly think like that. Like that's always on their mind. Someone is always probing for vulnerabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, I mean, like just a number of SSH attempts on like just my web server.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just, It's just like a nothing personal website that's sitting on a tiny Linode VPS somewhere and getting like hundreds of hits a minute from people trying to SSH into it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I'd say people, I mean bots.
Right.
But I guess for the purposes of probably taking it over and using it to spread.
Yep. Just using it to spread the love. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's crazy. It's, you know, so like when I talk to these guys, they're all guys. When I talk to them, they're like terrified basically all the time, you know, like, so, okay, here's another good part of the story. Like, just to give you the sense of scope, right? So there's this security firm that got called on to, they were like an outsourced security consultancy. It might not have been for Maersk, but it was for one of the companies that got hit.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a bunch of clients who got hit because, you know, they're interviewing one guy and like, he's just sort of, I think it was a holiday in the country that they were in. I'm sorry, I can't remember. But so all of a sudden his phone just blows up. It just starts ringing off the hook. And pretty quickly he's like yelling into the phone, unplug everything, you know, don't turn anything on. Don't let anybody connect to the network, so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And so he calls his like CEO who's on his way into the woods for some family vacation because it's a holiday, and he pulls over and basically camps out at some sort of coffee shop or something where he had internet access, and he's at this sort of roadside restaurant, and he does that for like 8 hours to get everything squared away. And he comes out and he goes to pay. And the POS doesn't work at the restaurant. So he goes to an ATM to get money out, and the ATM is down too.
Oh.
He goes to get gas, can't get gas. The gas pumps are offline. Nothing is, like, everything went down.
Like, the whole area. Wow.
Yeah. And then you're like, holy mackerel. I haven't had cash on me, you know, 2 days in a row for years. Like, in that situation where, I mean, I feel put out when I go to a place that doesn't take Apple Pay, you know, or like Android Pay. I'm like, oh, I have to pull out my credit card. Well, what if the credit card machines are down just like that? And like, everything kind of grinds to a halt. You're like, oh, I guess I'll go read a book.
I'm going to take a nap.
Right. Like, if you think about that, it's almost like, I mean, the same would happen with an electrical, like the same thing happens with a power outage.
Yeah.
But
at least with a power outage, I can read my Kindle. With this, I'm not so sure.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the phone network stayed up, but it could have gone down, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's just like, it's pretty freaky. I mean, it's like digital apocalypse, you know? Wow. I don't imagine, if I was home or in my office or something, like locally, it wouldn't be the worst.
Mm-hmm.
But imagine being on vacation or like traveling or something, and all of a sudden all of the platforms that you're used to standing on,
yeah,
your like, phone, well, credit cards, digital payments, all of a sudden, oh, that's okay, that's gone. Now what? You know?
Yeah. It's like, well, this is where I live now, time to go find a job.
Yeah, where they pay me in chickens.
Yeah. It's the only currency that still works.
Right. It's like, it just, when you read stuff like that, it just feels like we're so close to this, like sticks and stones.
It feels like science fiction.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like some, the precursor to some post-apocalyptic sci-fi trilogy.
Right.
Written for teenagers or something. I don't know. Probably involves some kind of game.
In which the adults are all idiots and the kids become the heroes of the day. They save the
mm-hmm.
day.
Mm-hmm.
I know you're referring to a particular book, and I can't figure out what
No,
it is.
I'm referring to the genre in general.
I see, okay. Yeah, the kids have to save the day, of course, because the adults are all bumbling fools.
Yeah, with that one kid with his 5-year-old iPod that happened to not be connected to the network.
Yeah.
And bring us all back.
Do you remember, we read a book a while ago, I think
Cyberstorm?
Cyberstorm, was that it?
Yeah.
Where it was basically like a massive snowstorm in Manhattan and everything was down, and they created like peer-to-peer cell phone networks.
Mm-hmm.
And people were like, he basically walked through this sort of slow decay of what we've come to depend on or come to assume is like a baseline civilization, and like pretty quickly turns into Lord of the Flies.
I don't think it was just a snowstorm, was it? I think it was like some kind of meteor strike because of an EMP that then led to the snow as a fall as a fallout after effect.
Or, yeah, the snow was a the snow was a complication.
Right, not the cause.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, and it just like walked through in like really painstaking detail, like all of the it was pretty good. It wasn't the greatest ever, but it was pretty cool. It was like fun to watch.
I seem to remember the ending being a bit of a disappointment.
Yeah.
But the book in general was pretty good.
Yeah. Like at the end, well, let's not give it away, but the end seemed like a real stretch, even even compared with the premise of like meteor strike, then, you know, nuclear winter and so on and so forth. And then it was like the end was
really...
And then it went...
It went Deliverance on it or something.
Yeah, exactly. And then, it was all a mistake. Wait a minute, what?
Yeah.
I can't even remember exactly how it ended because
I don't either.
It felt like, and then he woke up, like the end of Wizard of Oz.
And he owned an inn in Vermont.
Right. Yeah. Ooh, I got to stop eating Brussels sprouts right before bed. Yeah. I dug the stuff about the, there was a whole bunch of, plot points that revolved around mobile phones, which I really enjoyed at the time. I was like, that's really clever. A lot of cool stuff there. Really cool.
I mean, it's worth a read if you're looking for just like a fun light read. If memory serves, it wasn't like a difficult read.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is fun. I mean, you get this constant thing of, you know, security versus convenience. And I was just talking to a family member who's quitting his day job in the pharmaceutical industry and going out to do independent consulting. And he's doing some work for a startup where he is, you know, picking systems and advising them about what system they should use for project management and document sharing and all that stuff, you know, all those things that you do when you run a business. Mm-hmm. But it has a medical component, so it's automatically the sort of like concern of being HIPAA compliant and the sort of increased risk of losing personal medical information or personally identifiable information in general it's elevated, even if only like the appearance of importance, you know, because they're doing medical writing. So it's not like they're going to have data on like individual patients or anything, but still you're dealing with people who do deal with that. So data security is probably pretty important to them.
Yeah, I've worked on similar projects in the past, and it is there's a lot more red tape.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, the range of options are everything from build your own to like I don't even know, like SitePoint or some massive $1 million per year license for I don't even know what. I'm sure there's a product out there for this, and so we're looking at. You know, but at the same time, right, like right now, everybody's using a system. It's as far as either one of us can tell, and based on reputation, they present themselves as the most secure one or a very secure one that's, you know, PCI compliant, HIPAA compliant, you know, SOC 1, SOC, what is it? SOC 1, SOC 2, all that stuff. And you're like, great, your marketing page says you're cool. You know, you've got all the all the boxes checked and nobody else has
really?
All. Yeah, but do you really? Do they even know if they really do? Like, I'm sure the person who created that page or reviewed that page, you know, the CEO or CMO or something, believes that it's true.
Yeah, but I mean, all it takes is you know, one developer storing one type of data in a database somewhere that they're not supposed to.
Yeah, by accident or out of laziness or expediency.
Mm-hmm.
I've done it by accident. I've accidentally published, you know, credentials to GitHub or whatever. Even a private repo, but it's like still,
right?
You know, people at GitHub have access to it.
Yeah, and if GitHub gets hacked, you know,
Right, or bought by Microsoft.
Oh yeah, or that.
Right. So. Yeah, and we got talking about it, and it was like, yeah, you know, because we started talking about sort of going down that path of personal privacy, especially medical, and you know, we're coming up on an election season in the U.S., and you know, all the signs are in the yards all around my neighborhood for the Democratic primaries, and you know, we got talking about that, and you know, some whatever, a candidate who's running for mayor in Rhode Island, and mayor in Rhode Island, governor of Rhode Island, and they're looking like they've got a big groundswell, or the guy that's running in Texas that for Senate that is just, you know, up against a sort of famous and powerful incumbent, but he's getting a lot of traction. I want to say you're guaranteed that somebody's going to be rooting around trying to get any kind of dirt they can. Oh, guess what? He's got got MS or some kind of chronic something, you know, something that requires him to take hallucinogenic drugs or things that he can't make a good decision, you know, or, you know, like ongoing painkillers. Who knows? But it's
somebody's out there digging.
Right. It's really easy to imagine. It's really easy to fall into that sort of like, well, I'm not doing anything wrong, so who cares who's got access to my data? You know, and it's like, well, that works if you have no enemies, I suppose.
Right.
But you're divorced, right? How'd that go? You know, or, you know, your ex is in government or a policeman or has access to these databases where, you know, maybe they buy somebody lunch. Hey, let me buy you a coffee. You go get it. I'll just sit at your computer for a minute. Right. And it's like,
right.
There's like, I don't know. It's like, I get a little bit peeved when people are like, oh, I'm not doing anything wrong. I don't care who's got access to my data. It's like, well, what if you had enemies, or what if you do something that's perfectly reasonable, not illegal at all, perhaps embarrassing or distasteful to.
Like, what if you just want privacy?
Yeah, I don't. Like, yeah.
I mean, yeah, like we had a conversation last night that was like, no big deal, but I don't want the rest of the world knowing it.
Right. Yeah. It's like Cory Doctorow says, he's like, he makes a distinction between secrets and privacy by saying, you know, and like when people say, oh, I don't care who knows what, they're basically saying, I don't have any secrets, but that's different than privacy.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, well, you don't get dressed with the windows open.
Yeah. The line he uses is, everybody knows how your parents made you. It's not a secret.
Right.
But they don't want to do it in public. You know, it's private. They don't want, you know, I said this to someone recently. It's like so common for a camera or a mic to be in front of me, like right now. Mm. I 95% of the time operate like everything that comes out of my mouth is going to be public. I mean, it's very few times when I am not operating under the assumption that, you know, I'm in the background of some live stream that Cooper's doing on YouTube. It's just like constant surveillance. I mean, I have a security camera in my office right now that's broadcasting to the internet. You know, it's like, it's behind
I'm watching login. It.
I'm sure someone is, you know what I mean? Like, I don't believe for a second that there's no way for someone to access that. I don't believe it for a second.
Yeah.
So I just assume someone's watching me, you know, change when I'm getting ready to go to the gym, which is right downstairs. Like, whatever. I just mooned you, you know, but do I really want that on YouTube? No, not really.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm asking for it now.
Challenge accepted.
Exactly. Yeah. And it records too. It's not even just like, you don't even have to get lucky. Be like, oh, you know, you could just scroll through a month worth of history or however long they save it.
Oh, we could do a compilation.
Yeah. Do a super cut. Of me getting ready for the gym. Yay. Actually, the funniest story about that is much more low tech, which is that my office is on the second floor, and it looks out over the roof of some of the first floor. So like there's like the footprint of the building is bigger than the second floor, and the third floor is a little bit smaller than that. So you can step out of my windows onto the roof of the first floor. And one day I was changing to get ready to go to the gym, and I'd sort of, you know, I was Winnie the Poohing it, if you know what I mean, you know, shirt only. Mm-hmm. And two guys that were working walked up to my window and were just like, oh, hi. So never mind the technology.
Yeah.
You need the blinds once in a while, too. I was like, hi. Nice to see you. So, yeah. I don't know. It's like, where do you go from here? It's like, ugh.
Yeah. Yeah. We're all just one big hack away.
Seriously.
Flintstoning it around and without any pants.
Yeah. It could be, we could probably use it. A few years of just like, no, of course.
Just some downtime.
Yeah, just chill.
Yeah.
Man, God, that'd be brutal. Anyway, the couch or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of technology and old things, I bought an NES Classic.
No way.
Yeah.
Yeah, is it the relaunch one or did you get like a vintage?
No, the relaunch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, I've been playing a lot of Galaga.
Oh, I love that game.
A lot of Super Mario Brothers and Mario 3 and the original Zelda game. And
that's super fun. Yeah, I never played the original Zelda. We were like I was in college when, I don't know which one it was, Super Mario. I want to say it was Super Mario 2. I'm not sure though.
Probably 3.
Okay. Because
I had just started high school when 3 came out, and you're 10 years older than me, so.
Yeah, so this would have been like 86 or 7.
No, okay, 86 or 7 might have been 2 then.
Yeah, and we just like, it's a miracle I didn't fail out of everything, because we were just like,
right?
Just like, we get so good at that. We're doing, what's it called when you just try and finish it as fast as you can?
Yeah, just doing the speed runs.
Speed runs, right. Yeah. We got to the point where we just do speed runs and we're finding Easter eggs and stuff. And it was nonstop.
Yeah, when I was in high school, my freshman year, my next door neighbor used to come over every day after school and we'd speed run Mario 3 every day. Two player.
Yeah, super fun. And it ruined us as people.
Yeah, I'm worthless.
Man, we were having a conversation the other day about, you know, kids, you know, because I just like hung out with my entire family for a week, and by far we are the most permissive of almost anybody we know when it comes to, air quotes, screen time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Cooper's on the computer like it's his job, you know, every day. He doesn't even want to leave the house, but he's doing creative stuff, so I'm like, cool, do it all day, I don't care. It's like,
right, he's not sitting there playing Minecraft, he's making stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or even when he's playing Minecraft, he's making stuff. But
right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. See, the thing that I'm like, okay, could you switch to something else at least, is like the YouTube rabbit hole.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't really do that. That's more like he used to when he was younger, FGTV and all that stuff. But
yeah, you know, I used to think, you know, because Kira is one of those weird teenagers that usually leaves her bedroom door open. And so I'll walk by and I'll look in. And I used to think that she was just sitting in there after school watching YouTube videos all the time, because she would be sitting at her desk and YouTube would be on.
Yeah.
And she'd have her headphones on. And on the one hand, I was like, well, whatever. She just got done with the day of school. I don't really care if she wants to veg. But then no, if you go in and actually look over her shoulder, she's listening to the videos while she's sitting there drawing.
That's what Cooper does too.
Yeah.
He does like, he does this, he uses a computer in a way that I almost can't, like I have to walk away, because mm-hmm. he's only uses the mouse. He will only use the key. He does not use key. He started using keyboard commands recently because I showed him how to edit the podcast and he's like, oh, cool. You can just do that. It's a lot faster.
Yeah.
But he'll be sitting on the chair, sort of leaned to the side against the wall with one hand twirling his hair and the other hand on the mouse. And he'll be with over the ear headphones on. And he'll be animating something, click, 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 click. He's a super fast, accurate clicker. I'll give him that.
Mm-hmm.
But he's got like no exaggeration, 100 Chrome tabs open in the background. So he's using like Adobe Animate and he's jumping between, and he's got, you know, 40 tabs open there, you know, 40 different documents open there. And they're all named like Recovered 3, Recovered 3B, Recovered 4, you know, Recovered,
final,
Recovered.
Final, revised, final. Yeah.
Right. But he knows what he's looked like. Somehow he knows where the stuff is that he needs, even though the names are nondescriptive. And so he's just jumping around going all that, you know, and he'll take the Chrome browser, the entire browser, and grab it by the top bar and just move the whole thing to the bottom of the screen.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not behind anything. It's kind of out of the way down at the bottom. Instead of like minimizing it or hiding that application, he's just like mouses it,
drags
just
out of the way.
Move, get out of here. Doesn't use workspaces, none of that stuff. And I gave up, you know, over a year ago, I'm sure, being like, you know,
yeah,
you can just dad
that button,
right?
Yeah, it's like, I remember one time, I don't know if she has a preference now, But I remember one time asking Kira which web browser she preferred, and she's like, "Yeah, whichever icon's closest."
Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
That doesn't matter. Like, they, it's like, where's YouTube on this device? Like, if you get, especially to like younger, they just, mm-hmm. they just see the app. They just think of in terms of the icon, and it's not the, it's not, well, I mean, a browser's an app, but they don't care about that. Like, that's not the branding they care about. Cooper will have right. Safari and Chrome open. Doesn't, you know, those are the only browsers. I don't think it has Firefox. And it's just like, whatever, just tell me where YouTube is on this thing. How do I get to YouTube? How do I get to this thing? You know, how do I get to Newgrounds? How do I get to Animate? Like last night, he's like, could you yeah. install Animate on your laptop for when, you know, he's, because he has to sit there during my karate class for like an hour mm-hmm. and he just wants to keep animating stuff. So yeah, he'll just do his creative work while he's listening to YouTube videos in the background that he can't see.
Yeah.
It's weird. I mean, it's not weird. It makes sense, but it's funny that it's weird that they both do that same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Except Kira's just as likely to be drawing either. She'd be listening to YouTube and either drawing on her iPad, listening to YouTube on the computer and either drawing on the iPad or drawing on in an actual sketchbook.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, I don't know. It's like she uses YouTube for like we would use the radio.
Yeah. It's background noise basically. Yeah. Background music.
Yeah.
That is fun. I mean, you know, there've been plenty of times where I put Coffeetivity on in my headphones to like mm-hmm. drown out whatever was going on around.
Yeah. Or have She Who Must Not Be Named play a thunderstorm. I do that regularly.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I've never done that. Official Wafflecast. It is funny to think about like the sort of next generation coming up with all of this technology and like taking the internet for granted the way we take electricity for granted.
Yeah.
And that platform that will give them to sort of go to the next level. And I was like, you know, we've talked before about, you know, doing commissioned avatars or like other digital mm-hmm. artwork as a summer job beats flinging fries at McDonald's or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Kira had 3 commissions this summer.
Wow. That's cool.
I don't think she really tried for a lot of them. So, I mean,
yeah, without even trying.
Yeah.
I keep on trying to get Cooper to animate something for me. He's not interested in that, but he loves editing the podcast. Mm-hmm. So,
well, good luck with this one, buddy.
Right. So, yeah. And I was talking to a group before yesterday about the difference between this is not completely off topic, but that with the end of the Industrial Revolution, sort of the beginning of whatever we're in now, call it the connection economy or the knowledge economy, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. This sort of like shift to bits away from atoms in production, you know, producing bits in a way that people are perfectly happy to pay for. It increases the rate of change because it's software and it's more malleable. Things can change a lot more quickly.
Yeah,
and the people who are of a certain age that kind of grew up with that culture of, you know, you get a job, you work your way up. You get a gold watch and you go sit on the beach mm-hmm. and you followed rules. This is what schools are set up for. I'm probably getting hate mail from this, but schools are basically set up to create, you know, people who follow rules, soldiers, factory workers. It's, you know, K-12.
Part of it.
Yeah. Big part of it. It seems to be getting a little bit better, but, you know, that was a big part of it. And what happened was that it created a comfort zone. So you learned what it took to be safe, to have a roof over your head, to have food to eat, provide for your family and so on and so forth. So you figured out what your safety zone was. And that was basically obeying whatever your boss wanted you to do. And that created over time in several generations, it created a comfort zone. So like you've got this safety zone and your comfort zone is roughly overlaps it. Like where you figured out what it takes to be safe and that information is passed down from generation to generation. So sticking in your safety zone got turned into a comfort zone as well. But to conflate the two things is a mistake because what happens, or this is a Seth Godin thing, but as we shifted away from the Industrial Revolution, it takes time for the culture to catch up and the safety zone moved.
Before the comfort zone did.
Yeah. So now staying in your comfort zone is actually pretty risky when it comes to things like providing, you know, keeping a roof over your head, providing for your family, buying food, because sitting there and following rules, which is what became comfortable and was the kind of advice handed down from generation to generation, that it feels very scary to make your own rules and go first and do something new and create something and put it in the world and have people criticize it, or, you know, all that stuff feels very scary. It's very uncomfortable. You're outside of your comfort zone. But if you don't do that, you're outside of a safety zone. And I was talking about it.
It's just going to move on without you.
Yeah, it's just going to keep going. You know, like when I was doing consulting with credit union people, like, you know, presidents and boards and and talking to them, their comfort zone, their safety, there's like, they're so risk averse. It's financial services. And of course, they should be, you know, obviously you're going to take it seriously and not just going to be constantly changing and all that because there's a certain risk. But as the safety zone moved away from them, the things that, you know, this is armchair quarterback for me, but the things that they feel are safe are actually not safe. They're just comfortable.
Right.
And the thing, and those same behaviors that keep them comfortable are increasing the risk of danger.
Right, because they're going to lose their position in the market.
Yeah, you cannot stand still like that. So there needs to be some way to figure out, and this is where disruption comes from, because these fintechs come along and they don't have the legacy culture and baggage of, you know, expectations from three generations of members going back to who knows when.
Yeah.
And they can just start something completely new, really small, under the radar, that can actually respond to consumer demands. So it's like, anyway, I got really fascinated about that difference between the comfort zone and the safety zone and how they no longer overlap. And I'm looking at, you know, I don't know what generation Cooper and Maggie are going to be considered in, whatever it'll get named eventually.
Yeah.
But I wonder if they'll ever know, surely they will, but to what extent they will even ever have to follow traditional rules, or if they'll just be so used to creating constantly and constantly sharing it, constantly putting their creations in the world and learning how to deal with the feedback.
Mm-hmm.
If that will be both.
Their comfort zone.
Yeah, that'll be their comfort zone.
Yeah.
That would be cool. I would like that.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Certainly trying to encourage it.
feel like mine's kind of on the edge.
Of that generation?
A little bit older. And yeah, like she's going to, like I feel like growing up, and maybe this affected me growing up a little bit more than it did you, just because I'm, you know, a decade younger, that we're kind of right on the edge of, oh, you know, we grew up without the internet, but then we had the internet when we were young enough to learn and grow and adapt and latch onto it. And well, I guess you're probably the same way. And so it feels like we're kind of like sort of straddled the divide there.
Mm-hmm.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah. I mean, I was definitely like, I was 30 something the first time I saw the internet.
Yeah. I was 18.
Yeah.
No, I was, well, first time I got on the internet, but I was messing around on BBS systems and stuff like that when I was, you know, 12 or 13.
Yeah. I had nothing like that. Nothing like that until I totally missed that whole era.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I was living in a van with the Rock Band.
Right.
Missed that whole thing. I didn't, like, there's an entire blackout period where I didn't see any movies or TV shows. And people are like, what? How did you not see Seinfeld? Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. But I feel like I kind of like have a foot in both worlds.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of feel like in the same way, in terms of, like, you're talking about the creative, go out, do your own thing, make your own mark, put your stuff out there, do something new versus go out and get a job and work for somebody else. I feel like Kira is kind of the same way, like foot in both worlds where you could go either way.
Mm.
Was what I was trying to get around to saying.
Yeah, no, I get it. I'm trying to think. My memory's terrible, so I can't think of jobs she's had. I don't remember hearing that she's had jobs, like a job, like working at a Subway.
She hasn't. Like the commissions this summer was the first
mm-hmm.
thing like that she's had. And so, I mean, I know she wants to do something next summer because she wants to work and save up money. But I don't know if it's going to be going out and getting a job somewhere or if it's going to be putting herself out there more online for the art stuff.
Right. Yeah. I mean, sometimes I Eric has been spending a lot of time at like a yarn store, and we the other day we drove up to
making yarn bobs.
Yarn bones. Yes, making yarn bones. Exactly. That she's a very dangerous individual, public enemy. But yeah, so we, you know, go to this little store where this woman runs it, and she dyes her own yarn and gets, you know, yarn from all over the world. And it's like, and I'm like looking at it, and it's like this physical product that, you know, you, mm-hmm. comes from this. It's just so like, I'm like, I know it's not easy. Of course, it's not easy. Running a business is never easy. I don't care what it is. It's always hard. There's a lot of moving parts. You've got a million customers. It's always, but I look at it, and there, I see like, there's a lot of things about that that I like better than what I do.
Yeah. Like
some serious advantages there.
It's not easier, but it's simpler.
Yeah, there's a different, I think some things are hard. Of course, everything's different. Some things are harder and some things are easier. So it's easy to be like, grass is always greener. I'm like,
yeah, just start to say it could just be a grass is greener thing.
Right. You know, I'm like looking at it, like, man, she could just like sell this physical object. Like someone comes in and she just gives it to the other person, and then the other person just gives her money. It seems so easy.
Right.
You know, compared to, you know, think about the stripe work you've done. You know, it's like so complicated.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. It's just, I know I'm being, you know, oversimplifying it, and grass is greener and all that.
Kind of like romanticizing it. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. It strikes me every time.
I really like having nice quality physical things.
Sure.
Like I'm not like super materialistic. Oh, I must have everything. But if I've got like, oh, that's a really nice pen, or that's a really nice watch, or that's a really nice keyboard. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, I appreciate the value in that stuff.
Yeah, me too. Especially with stuff I use every day.
Right. Exactly. You
know, notebook, pen, computer, all that stuff. Like stuff that I pull out once a year, like the dishes for Thanksgiving. I'm like, eh,
whatever. Yeah. Oh, this is a really big waffle.
Yeah.
2,000 square foot waffle.
Yeah. All right. That's it for this week. I'm Jonathan Stark.
I'm Kelly Shaver.
And we hope you join us again next week for Terrifying Robot Dog. But we won't blame you if you don't.
No, not at all.
Bye.